Serena Hollow stumbled through the lockless door and back to reality. Her grace and poise were left wanting as her muscles admitted they had nothing left to give. She hit the cool tile with a thud as the lock on the door shimmered out of existence. The boy she had been carrying fell from her arms, awakening suddenly. Her time in that afterlife was over, and without another way, she would never see Michael again. Naomi and Chloe were at her side quickly, pulling her up and moving her to the nearest pew. The shrine was abandoned, except for those who claimed Michael as family. Naomi, Chloe, Trey, Leon, Simon, Sebastian, Kai, and Joey. They all waited for Serena to speak, to answer the questions none of them could utter. Was it over? Had they won?
Michael isn't returning. We beat Angelo and Dark, and Michael had complete control of the situation. He was able to return, but he gave it to another.
She remembered his smile, how bright and warm and sad it had been. Then she gestured to the boy she had been carrying.
At the end, he chose to be a hero.
Jamal?
Trey's whole body was shaking, and he dropped his gun to the ground. Trey fell to his knees.
Is that you?
Trey?
The boy slowly stood. He rubbed the sleep out of his eyes.
What's going on? Where are we? I was in the graveyard with Michael. I don't...
Trey tackled the boy to the ground, hugging him.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
What about Angelo?
He gave up his life to bring Catherine back.
And the third life?
We killed Dark, but Angelo brought him back almost immediately.
So the bastard knew how to be a good father after all.
Delightful. From one member of the Shade family to another. Will Catherine come for us as well?
I don't know. All I know is Michael isn't coming back and will soon forget everything about him.
Her eyes began to prickle with pain and tears.
This wasn't how it was supposed to end. We were supposed to be happy.
Silence permeated the group. Naomi skulked away and found the bottle of liquor prepared for the wedding and all the glasses that accompanied it. She handed out glasses, pouring for everyone.
Then we need to do this quickly before any of us sleep, pass out, or die, as we find out if we're on the right side of that mercenary war out there.
So this is his legacy. I wonder if he would have liked it.
Trey looked around the room and then at the familiar ring on his middle finger. Jamal sat on his lap, still confused. The brothers sniffed the drink and had the same painful reaction.
What is this? It smells rotten.
It's Scaro. It'll put some hair on your chest and make a man of you, East Sider.
Who are you?
Sebastian bowed dramatically.
Captain Sebastian of the I Don't Got a Ship Yet. I'm the 27th most feared pirate on the Sea of Statues.
Is that supposed to impress me?
Obviously. I'm kind of a big deal.
He's Don's brother.
Trey nodded solemnly, then looked toward Michael's body in the corner of the room. It was covered as modestly as possible, but they could still see he had died with a smile on his face. Adrian's body was beside it. Erica's body was already gone, taken to the crypts by some of the clan guards who had refused to abandon their home, even in the face of insurmountable odds.
Naomi, we'll need to deal with his body before we sleep. We promised Michael we would.
I know. Let's find the biggest tree in the area and bury him under there. He would have liked that.
Make sure you take care of it. Even if we forget about him, I want him to know he was loved. All he ever wanted was to belong.
What should we do with Adrian? I hate him, but we shouldn't just leave him here for carrion birds to pick at.
I'll have archivists collected and take him to the royal crypts in Hollow. They'll be able to move without politics influencing them. Hopefully. Wanderer's mercy. This wasn't how it was supposed to go. My family is gone. It was meant to be me. Why did this happen?
None answered, but one by one each raised their glass toward Michael's body.
At times, we all hated him. But here we are, remembering a man who did his best. And that is all we can hope to achieve in our short lives. To the King of the Imbeciles,
To the worst brother I ever had.
To the King Killer.
To my best friend.
To the Dragon Slayer.
To the man who pushed me to be better.
To the friend who never forgot me.
Serena got to her feet, wiped her tears away, and pointed her glass toward the lockless door.
To Michael Kingman, this is not the end of us. I promise you that.
And despite the grief or the concern any of them might have felt at her words, everyone drank their Scaro in a single gulp. Only Trey and Kai made faces afterward, the others already used to the pain. They crushed their glasses beneath their boots, gathered their thoughts and belongings, and then prepared for another fight. Simon put a hand on her shoulder as they stared at the lockless door together.
I'll stay awake for as long as I can to record his story. Without him to correct me, some things won't ring true to those that knew him. The world will see his hate, while we'll know his love, if they even read it. After that, I'll go over the knowledge I have about the Wolven Kings. I may not be able to free Gwen as he wanted to, but I'll do my best. One of us must remain on top of them. Their war may be halted, but it's far from over.
If I continue to fight, will I be throwing away the life he gave me?
It's only a wasted life if you forget to appreciate what's around you. A life focused on the past will bring regret, just as a life focused on the future will create anxiety. We are in control of nothing but the now. If you want to continue fighting, do it for yourself, not Michael.
That wasn't the answer Serena was looking for. She needed guidance, or a sign, or a person to run away with, or something that would give her direction. She wasn't a queen anymore. She didn't have her kingman. All of those around her had chosen their new paths. So who did she want to be now? Where would she go? Would she reclaim her throne from Amelia? Or would she choose another path? Could she even be something other than a queen? The walk out of the palace felt long and desolate, burn marks and fallen weapons littering the path back to the city. The others told her things that were important for Serena to know. Jay Prince, another version of him, it was complicated, and Amelia had escaped and were likely going to regroup in Hollow now that they had the throne. She didn't care. It was just a stupid stone chair. It held no importance for her. Not while Michael was gone. Not while she couldn't choose her ending. And so, for all the fools for love there had ever been, the one that was created during their walk to Vargo was the scariest of them all. She would find a way to bring Michael back, no matter what it cost her, no matter the price, no matter where she had to go. This would not be the end of their story.
Who did it?
Alexa sprinted toward them. Her hair stuck to her skin like wet clothes. Her face was flushed, and the tips of her fingers were stained with gunpowder. She held a flintlock pistol in her left hand.
Who killed Michael? Which one of you is responsible?
Me.
Serena stepped forward.
Whatever consequences there are, I will bear them myself.
Wanderer's mercy. What did he do? Did he know? No, he couldn't have, but...
Know what?
Alexis motioned for Serena to step through the entrance gate. A horde of mercenaries were outside, at least a quarter of Regal Company, maybe more. And at the sight of Serena, they fell to one knee like a wave slowly retreating out to sea. It spanned the entire road down to the docks. Thousands of mercenaries bowed to her and her alone. Orbis Company was off to the side, eyeing the controllable force of nature and Serena as if they carried the same amount of power.
Michael killed Liam. And then you killed Michael. And mercenaries have a code. The Conqueror's will is absolute. They're yours to command.
The others started to look at her with concern, wondering if she had finally snapped. If the loss of Michael had been too much to bear. But once she collected herself, she smiled.
Don't you all get the joke? I inherited his dream. I'm the mercenary queen.
Dark was reborn in a holy place surrounded by flowers, alone and senseless. He woke with a start, as if falling from a great height, and then began to slam at the ceiling that was right in front of his nose. His fist burst through the wood he was being contained in, tearing open an exit. The Black Death tumbled out of his coffin.
I see you've finally woken up. Good. Now we can begin.
Dark looked up and saw four people sitting around a table. It was filled with fine delicacies on golden plates and wine poured into crystal goblets. A portrait of his father in his military uniform hung on the far wall above an old blood-stained divan. The man to the left was someone Dark could never forget. High noble Charles Domay. He twirled a slender knife in a small circle as the tip was pressed against the wood. A young man sat next to the immortal. He had his auburn hair cut short and tight, a birthmark on his left temple, and the build of a Theban berserker, with a warhammer across his lap. There were more scars on his body than streaks of paint on a masterpiece. Dark's mother, Catherine Nevers, as young as she had been when she died, sat across from the immortal and his soldier. Her arms were folded, and she wore a threadbare yellow dress, the one she had been buried in for over a decade.
Davis, Demay told me what happened, how your father tried to bring me back to life and how you tried to bring Zara back. I'm sorry you weren't successful.
She crossed her legs and took a sip of wine, her expression souring as she swallowed.
I've decided we're going to work with Demay to bring your father and Zara back to life, just as your father should have done from the beginning. His pride blinded him, and I'm to blame for that. Usually I keep him in check, but no matter. Our family will be reunited soon enough.
What's going on?
We've made a deal. You're going to help me kill the Wolven Kings so I can finally die in peace. And I'm going to help you open one of the other lockless doors to the afterlife. Maybe this time you won't be thwarted by a Hollow who didn't even have a Kingman to guide her.
Dark didn't respond, finally focusing on the fourth person at the table. It was a man a few years younger than himself, with messy brown hair, deep amber eyes, a crown brand on the side of his neck, and a smile that he wanted to beat out of existence. The man left his seat, rounded the table, and then stopped in front of Dark as he remained on the ground. Why was he so happy? What reason did he have to be so content?
Hey, Dark. You didn't think the reborn Titan would be the end of our relationship, did you?
The man made a flourish toward the others at the table.
And don't bother mentioning me to them. Only you can see me. You didn't want me to leave your side, and now I never will.
Who are you?
Dark forced himself to stand. He didn't know why, but he couldn't appear weak in front of this boy.
What are you?
I'm you. But better.
The boy met his eyes and smiled broadly, amber into a grayish red.
What? Still don't get it? Fine. I'll be clearer. I'm an infection in your mind. A disease you can't cure. A madness you can't ignore. A parting gift from your favorite person in the whole world. And a legacy that can't be erased. My name is...
A boy awakens in a too bright church that hurts his eyes and blurs his vision. He stumbles, trying to stand, knees turning weak and inward, and he crashes back down into the wooden pews. His throat is dry and his stomach growls, a twisty, knotty pain substituting for the food he craves. There's nothing on his mind. He can't remember his name, his home, his family, his beliefs, or anything about how he ended up here. Only that he did, and that punishment seems fitting enough. Only when his head stops throbbing does he realize there's a crumpled piece of paper in his right hand, lodged there as if stuffed in a stone statue's closed hand. He unfurls it and reads, "I remember you, and I'll find you again, no matter where you are. Just wait a little longer. You will come home. I promise that, with all my heart." The sender's name is nothing but scratches. Regardless, the boy doesn't recognize the handwriting nor understand the letter's meaning. Who's looking for him and why? This place is his home. It's all he's ever known. And yet, there are doors in the distance. One towering monster of iron that looks as if it would take a dozen men simply to budge it open. Three smaller doors are next to it. One red, one blue, and one black. He checks the door handle on the red one first. It doesn't budge. Nor does the blue one. But the black one creeps open at his touch, with nothingness behind it. The boy doesn't flinch or hesitate, curiosity leading him forward. His skin feels as if it's being pulled in all directions, stretched out past the point of snapping. And then the pain stops. His feet and hands collide with the ground, and the boy has arrived in a strange new place. Bits of rock float around him. The ground is gray, lumpy, and craters stretch out to the horizon like an endless sea. Everything has a slight bluish tint from the massive thing in the sky, and the ground is unstable. Six huge pieces of rock, excluding the one he's standing on currently, float around him like a broken pane of glass. There is a man a slight distance away from him. His clothes are in tatters, his hair is long and unkempt, and his skin is paler than that of the dead. A giant beast lies behind him, sleeping contentedly. Its wings are attached to its front limbs. It's a wyvern, not a dragon. And for some reason, the boy is more certain of that than anything else since he awoke. The man scoops up rocks around him, whispers to them, and then hurls them at the massive round thing in the sky. They flash a bright red, blue, or white before disappearing from view. The boy wonders where these rocks are going, and if the messages the man speaks into them will ever be heard by others. He doubts it. There's nothing here but stone and dust, and the massive thing in the sky is probably no different. Is there even anyone else in the world but these two? As the boy stands, the man turns to him. There's a symbol of a crying wolf head on his lapel, barely visible, almost withered away by time.
Who are you?
Who cares who I am? Who are you?
I am Mikhail of the Wolves, third son of the man who was unrivaled under the sun. Some call me a wolven king, while others call me the wanderer. Some consider me a prophet, but all I truly am is my husband's prisoner in this forsaken place, doomed to spend my life shouting warnings to those below me.
The wolven king approaches the boy, but the boy does not cower, standing straight and still. He feels stupidly brave, and maybe, for a moment, that is all he ever was.
You have the arm that denotes my brother's servants, and you have an amber eye. Are you?
The boy doesn't hear the man's next words, so he smiles and shakes his head.
I'm nobody.
Nobody.
The man turns away from the boy. He reaches down, grabs a lumpy rock, and then hands it to him. It shines a dull blue.
Speak into it, and then hurl it at the planet in front of us. If you are truly nobody, nothing you can say will cause any trouble.
The boy takes the rock from the man.
And if I'm not nobody?
Are you lying to me?
If I was somebody, I'm not anymore. I don't remember anything about my life.
You're a forgotten, then. But how did you end up? It doesn't matter. There's only one way to find out, isn't there?
The boy cradles the rock in his hands, twisting it around like a toy.
I can say anything to it?
Anything you want, as long as it's the truth.
The boy raises the rock to his lips and closes his eyes.
There's a boy on the moon waiting to be found. Whoever you are, will you remember me?
The Legacy of the Mercenary King 3, The Voyage of the Forgotten by Nick Martell is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2022 by Nick Martell, all rights reserved. Recorded with permission of the author. Production copyright 2024 by Graphic Audio, LLC. All rights reserved. narrated by Nick J. Russo and Terrence Aisleford, featuring Nick J. Russo as Michael, Carolyn Kashner as Serena, Cody Roberts as Liam, Keith Richards as Dark, and Laura C. Harris as Naomi, with additional performances by Amanda Forstrom, Andrew James Spooner, Bradley Foster Smith, Chris Davenport, Christopher Graybill, Christopher Walker, Crystal Lee, Daniel Yaga, Elena Anderson, Eric Mesner, Eva Wilhelm, Gabriel Michael, Gail Shalin, James Konacek, Joel David Santner, Jonathan David Bullock, Ken Jackson, Lamont Rigel, Lysna Bruneau, Lydia Craniotis, Marissa Clay, Matthew Pauly, Michael John Casey, Mike Carnes, Natalie Van Sistine, Richard Rowan, Samantha Cooper, Scott McCormick, Stephanie Namet Parker, Steve Wanell, Stephen Carpenter, Tanya Milievic, Taylor Cohan, Wayne Leggett, Wynn Delano, and Zeke Alton. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Colin Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producer Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoy The Legacy of the Mercenary King, you might also enjoy Red Rising, Sons of Eris by Pierce Brown and Rick Hoskin. All these titles and many more are now available at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening to hear a preview from Red Rising Saga 1, Red Rising.
Mustang tackles someone off the battlements. I slide tackle one of the archers as he levels his bow at her. Outside, Pax shouts for me to open the gates. He's actually crying for combat. I follow Mustang down into their courtyard, jumping from the parapets down to where she fights a big Siri student. I end the boy with my elbow and take my first glimpse of the Bread Fortress. The castle is an unfamiliar design, a courtyard leading to several buildings and a huge keep where the bread bakes, making my stomach rumble. But all that matters to me is the gate. We rush to it. Shouts from behind us. Too many for us to fight. We get to the gate, just as 36 House Seri students run at us across the courtyard from their keep.
Hurry!
Milia shoots arrows at the enemy from the parapets. Then,
hurry!
I open the gate. He shoves me aside. He's shirtless, massive, muscled, screaming. His hair is painted white and spiked with sap to form two horns. A piece of wood as long as my body serves as his club. The Hauseri students flinch back. Some fall, some stumble. A boy screams as Pax thunders close.
Pax Altelmanus!
He wants no nickname as he charges forward like a minotaur possessed. When he hits the mass of Hauseri students, it is ruin. Boys and girls fly through the air like chaff on reaping day.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romanticy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.